Sam, so my first question for you is, when you're at a dinner party and people ask you what do you say?
I just go right into, I make games for the New York Times. And everyone seems to think right off that means I make crossword puzzles. So that's always like the first struggle. And then depending on how old the dinner party guests are, they will really hang on to that idea. And they'll ask me if I'm Will Shorts. They'll start like, so you're the guy I'm swearing at when I like, I'm trying to fill this out. I'm like, no, I don't do any of that. I'm actually very bad at crossword puzzles. And everyone thinks I'm Will Shorts, like, and then they wanted to, do you know him? Have you ever met him? And I'm like, yeah, I've met him like twice, but.
Hi, I'm Jamin Warren, and this is the 256 Podcast. 256 is a marketing agency that prepares brands for the future of play and interactivity. We spend a lot of time talking to clients and partners about games, and so we thought, what if we brought more of those conversations to more people? To give you a little bit of background on the name, 256 is the agency side of a magazine I created almost 10 years ago called Killscreen. In 8-bit games like Pac-Man and others, level 256 has a bug that floods the screen with numbers and letters so that you can't play past it. I was so inspired by that and also the movie King of Kong that I called our magazine Killscreen. Get it? All right, now on to our guest. Even if you're not in the gaming space, this podcast is for you. We bring in guests for quick, insightful conversations on how and why games are more relevant than ever, in culture, but also in marketing. Hopefully, you'll walk away with a better understanding of why play matters. Our first guest is Sam Von Aaron, a game designer at the New York Times. Yes, you heard right. The New York Times makes games. While many media companies are struggling, the Times is profitable, and its digital-only subscriptions are growing, in part due to its expanded crossword section, which Sam designs games for. If you visit nytimes.com/crosswords, you'll find games that we discuss, such as Spelling Bee, a word game that challenges you to make as many words as possible with just 7 letters. We speak with Sam about why the New York Times makes games, how his game fits into the rest of the Times' news coverage, common misconceptions about what a New York Times game looks like, who he's trying to reach, their audience, and much, much more.
Are you ever tempted just to say that you're Will Shorts? Because I don't know what Will Shorts looks like, so I wouldn't be able
to. That's true. I think I'm good being my own man. That's what I would say.
Fair
enough. Having met Will Shorts, I guess. But usually the way I like to introduce it is, so the New York Times put out the mini crossword like 4 years ago, and that was like really popular, and they said, hey, we should make more games. We could probably get like more people to come onto our website and play stuff. But we have no idea how to make games, so we should probably hire someone who knows how to do that.
Yeah.
And that's who I am. So
probably a good idea, just to hire.
Probably
a
good idea, you know.
What do you think that people have the hardest time understanding about your job? Because I think people are familiar with crosswords and the New York Times crossword puzzle, but you say like, oh no, crosswords are a kind of game, but I make other types of games. What is there a disconnect for folks in terms of like, what do you find yourself explaining the most?
Well, I really don't go into some of the process stuff that we involve in. And like, I think honestly, for a lot of people that are even asking, it's the New York Times even making games is kind of a novel idea and like really out there concept. So I don't even get into like how we prototype and how we test and like, you know, what makes a good game, what makes a puzzle, all these different, like, different ways that we can talk about it. It's really just, like, the New York Times even makes games, and then people are like, wow, that's really smart of the New York Times to get into the gaming space. And, like, that's usually as far as the conversation gets, I guess. you know?
It's interesting that, like, when you meet people and you tell them that you work in the New York Times and they think, like, news games, right? So they think games,
right.
But it's like, oh, you have to be working on something news-related.
Right,
but if you told
right.
people that you worked at the food section, they wouldn't say, oh, so you're going to be, like, on the 2020 trail, like, following what the candidates
right.
eat, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're accustomed to, like, food or design being part of the New York Times, but it seems like with games, the only conception is, like, either crosswords or you have to be doing something quote-unquote important.
Right, exactly. And, like, everyone assumes that I must be really good at crosswords, too, right? And that's why the Will Shorts thing comes up even, too. It's even a concept of what making a game is, right? Like, making a crossword puzzle is not really the same thing. It's a little bit more like level design in that sense. But everyone kind of conflates all that stuff, especially, again, like, going to that less knowledgeable about the game space sort of feeling.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the New York Times, like, why is the New York Times a good platform for games? Like, why is it a good place to find new games? And what kind of value do you think you add as a designer to the overall, like, New York Times brand?
I do think it's it really comes back to that content thing. Like, the New York Times is sort of a content company, first and foremost. I think game designers, and I'm definitely guilty of this, like, to really focus a lot on systems and stuff, and, like, making these, you know, I've been playing Drop 7 again, and I love Drop 7 so much, but it's this really contained, like, skill system, and it's not really, it's not like a TV show, right? It's not something you come back to every day as part of your ritual, as part of your life. And that's, I think, what games at the New York Times is really good for, is sort of bringing more play into people's life in a way that can be sort of ritualized and comforting in a weird way. And I think that's what's really nice about it, too, in comparison to other game platforms and other game industries, sub-industries, is that we have this, we're bringing play into the lives of people who kind of don't value play as much. And it's a little bit more respectful, a little bit more elegant. And it's really about that content stream. And, like, I've been saying a lot lately, time scale is the big advantage the New York Times has. And it's that you're going to play these games for, like, a good portion of your life. And, like, this is something that you're going to live with and really make a part of you, I guess, as compared to the only other things I think that really work on that kind of time scale are games that are speedrun, I guess, and then, like, competitive games, right?
Yeah.
I think it feels nice for there to be this sort of mature, ritualized, like, it's like brushing your teeth, kind of. You're just going to play the game. You know, the way that the crossword puzzle already exists in a lot of lives, we're sort of trying to emulate that.
Do you think context is important? I mean, I think when I go to newyorktimes.com on any given day, just given all of the insanity and craziness in the world, that's not a place I would say I find a lot of, like, peace. Whereas with, you know, with games, I think there's probably something meditative, starting with the crossword, but about games where they don't exist in this world. Do you think the context of being at the New York Times maybe is an advantage for you, in that you're giving experience to people that is not found in other parts of the paper?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we position our whole team, crosswords and everything, as, like, the break, like, the little summer cottage away from hell, basically, right? Especially right now. And yeah, 100% the context matters. I think the interesting sort of effect is that there's a lot less need for us to sort of create, like, an alternate world or something like that. We're just, diversion is, like, a put down, but, like, we are kind of diversions from all this other craziness going on. And that's, like, because we live in such sharp contrast to all that, I think we do bring a lot of more joy, which is, like, a very satisfying and kind of, I don't know, life-affirming feeling to be able to bring this to people. And sort of one interesting thing in terms of context is that the players are sort of playing themselves. There's no roles they're playing, right? Like, in a traditional video game, you sort of control a character or whatever. But here you really play as yourself, and then you can play with other people. A lot of people like to share the crossword and solve it with someone else. Or we put out the spelling bee last year, and people have emailed us saying, like, I play this every night. I call my wife, who's on the other side of the country. I call my grandfather. And that kind of joy and that kind of togetherness, giving all this, all these fun, happy, nice words, these are all kind of baked into that context and living within that context, I think.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to switch gears a little bit and ask about audience a little bit. Like, is there a person in mind that you're designing for? Do you find that there's a certain type of person who plays New York Times games? Just anything that you can share about, like, who's on the other end, who ultimately is experiencing the things that you create?
We get a lot, I mean, it's not too much of a surprise, but we get a lot of word people. I mean, there's that context rising up again. I mean, people who are just interested in language and words play a lot of our games. We're trying sort of to push out from that and get into broader audiences and stuff like that. That's a lot of what the new games are supposed to be about.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we've gotten a lot of feedback on is, like, kids, actually, and we're not really targeting them, but...
Yeah.
But a lot of the games that we've experimented with have been really popular with kids. And I think some of the things, it really varies game to game. And, like, that's why we've been doing a lot of testing on newyorktimes.com to try to see if we can attract these other audiences outside of just, like, white guys who like crosswords, right? It's really, we don't want that to be our only audience. We want to try to capture everyone of all ages, genders, whatever.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. As wide as the audience of the Times.
Yeah, you know, yeah, exactly. And we're trying to do a little bit more research to see if there is, like, a little bit more targeting that we can do than that. But we really just want everyone to have a good time and play some games. So,
is there like a New York Times game style? Yeah, it's interesting. On the news section, right, there's a style guide, there's conventions about like how the New York Times differentiates itself from, say, the Wall Street Journal or whoever it might be, right? And that those are well-known conventions. Those change over time. But there's an idea that there's a certain kind of quintessential New York Times essence on the news side. I'm curious, do you have something that's like that, a through line for all of the games on the game side that you could point to?
Nothing really formalized, I think. My own personal guide is, I don't know if you've seen, there's a Bryant Gumbel special about the crossword, and they interview Will Shortz on it. And he says this thing about how when you solve a puzzle, you've achieved perfection and like everything comes together. And I think that is the New York Times style guide for game design right there. It's just like solving the puzzle is about everything falling into place and being like perfect. And the world is like sane and nice and that you did it, right? I mean, it's really, there's all these things are kind of baked into it. I should formalize it probably. but I think that kind of puzzle where you can get that kind of action is really the thing that we're going for with all this.
Yeah, that's really interesting, like that sense of, I mean, it sounds like you're starting from like an emotional standpoint, like the goal is like a sense of accomplishment or feeling, and then that does give you a lot of, it sounds like with the crossword, that's kind of baked into the crossword model, and you're kind of like working from that and figure out like what are other things that can give that sheer sense of completion for.
Yeah. It's definitely like an achievement thing. And I think that works with how the New York Times at large works, is then that reading the New York Times is kind of a point of pride for a lot of people, and like especially solving the crossword. But it's like being a good citizen requires you to read the New York Times, I think, is a sense that I get from the readers of the New York Times. They take a lot of pride in it, and we want our games to kind of feel the same way in that sense.
Yeah, great. Well, Sam, thank you so much.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
And thank you for listening to the 256 podcast, where we talk about the future of play and interactivity. This podcast is produced by Trisha Tonko with help from Anthony Martinez and music by Lucene. If you like this show, tell your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a rating on iTunes or wherever you listen. I'd also love to hear from you. You can find me, Jamin Warren, on Twitter at JAMINWAR. You can also find 256, that's also spelled out, on Twitter and at 256podcast.co, where you can sign up for our newsletter. Thanks so much and take care.